The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. Every ticket is in. We appreciate it. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, everybody. Producer number 9, so much more than a producer. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well.
I'm very excited. You know why?
Why?
Aaron Schatz with his annual end of regular season pre-playoff appearance on the show. And what that means is we'll go through a season's worth of great DVOA numbers. The highlights. We're not going to go into minutia on it. Mm-hmm. We'll get the highlights. Who ended up number one? What ended up being historic? Who are the biggest risers? Who are the biggest losers? What does he have going into the postseason? The historic anomalies. We'll get into that. And then, of course, he is an awards voter.
We'll try to pry out whatever we can without getting him fired, Gil.
Well, he's super generous about it, but he definitely draws the line, right? Where he's like, I'm not going to tell you, but we can sort of read between the lines.
Yeah, even the last appearance he did on this show, I was surprised at how open he was talking about just in years past. Yeah. Like trying to pry this stuff out of voters, like they are told most of them are told shut up because you're going to get this taken away if you go and talk about it, because they want to make the show something special, right? Like I understand that.
Yeah, you're going to get it taken away if you sing about it, but God forbid you break our guidelines. That way you can keep your award.
Oh my God, Gil,
just trying to get you mad from the moment.
Did Willow text us yesterday just to piss us off, both me and you? Like, what was that?
I think it's more getting you riled up. You wind up on this stuff.
All I'm going to say, we're doing the ANG NFL Awards tomorrow.
Yes.
If it is any reflection of what is going to happen in the actual NFL Awards, I am screwed when it comes to comeback player of the year.
Oh, wow. Okay, so explain that to people. So we have taken our swath of all of our regular guests.
Yes.
They have submitted their ballots, how they would vote for.
Yes.
And so is that going to be a reflection of the actual vote? We shall see.
Zach, JVT, I think I'm still waiting on. I think he's the last one I'm waiting on.
Well, if only we had him coming up.
If we only had him coming on to peer pressure him.
Yeah.
It is Zach Cohen, Drew Dinzik, Will Hill, Jason Weingarten, Chris Felica, Steve Fezzik.
And we will attach their names to what the votes are.
Oh, yeah. You better believe that.
We are. Naming names, people. JVT, we just mentioned Jonathan Altobo, will join us momentarily, our senior NBA analyst. What an NBA tilt tonight. People still use that word, tilt?
Yeah.
Cavaliers, Thunder, 31-4 Cavs, 30-5 Thunder. Cavs favored by 2.5. We'll see what JVT has to say about that. By the way, how bad were the Warriors last night?
Good. Yeah, it was bad. I didn't see the end of the game. I took advantage of going to bed a little early because a couple tonight. Gil, I guess I'm probably the only one. Cavs Thunder, undercard, man. That's the undercard game.
Undercard?
Giannis and Wemby going at it afterward. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Well, I don't think that's the undercard, but I get what you mean.
Can't wait to watch that.
Jim Root, 3-man weave. We'll do our playoff power rankings. We look forward to that. And Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke. Let's start with the one firing that happened yesterday, added on to the initial ones in the NFL. Obviously, the first were Gerard Mayo after the season, right after the Patriots played on Sunday. And then, of course, Doug Peterson with the Jags the next morning. Antonio Pierce, to no one's real surprise, fired by the Raiders yesterday. Tom Telesco stays as the GM, but Pierce done after less than two seasons, which is exactly what Josh McDaniels had, less than two seasons. With the Raiders. Remember before that, John Gruden, who got ensnared in the whole Daniel Snyder email thing, he could only coach partial season. Then it was Rich Bisaccia, got the Raiders to the playoffs, but then it was McDaniels, followed here by Antonio Pierce, and Pierce relieved of his duties. And I just want to say this. I don't know what your favorite part of the Antonio Pierce experience was.
That's funny, Gil. You're a funny guy.
because I do guessing lines Mondays, just a quick glance at some of the things. I'll just give you a couple candidates. Week one, Raiders 4th-and-1 at the Chargers 43, down 6 with 7:15 to go. He decides to punt. Perhaps you enjoy week 7 better with 10:11 left in the fourth quarter against the Rams when it was 4th-and-goal at the Rams 9 with 2:50 left in the game, down 8. And he decides to kick a 27-yard field goal. Never, never to see the ball again. Anyway, I bring that up because we have a this is such a great, you know, doing the Megapod. And by the way, this is a triple header for me today. After a numbers game, it's going to be the Megapod, the wild super wild card round, Megapod, Megapod
nice.
Wild card
so
round.
So much going on
with Todd Wishnev, Will Hill, and of course today's guest Cleve TA. One of the great NFL Twitter follows there is. Cleve TA is going to do the Megapod. And then after that, Drew and I are going to do the pre-draw portion of the Australian Open. But we have with the Megapod, we have this segment that we do every week called Dumbo of the Week. Todd Wishnev's name for a coaching blunder. Typically, sometimes it's a player like Jonathan Taylor dropping the ball before it crossed the goal line. But typically it's a coaching blunder. And I just want to really, I'm super flattered because this is, I want to give the credit here. This is Shooter McGamblin. Shooter McGamblin has on Twitter has tracked all of our nominees for Dumbo of the Week throughout the NFL season. So we, it's not only that we give it to somebody, we have nominees every week and then we pick one. Well, look at this. Antonio Pierce ended up with a double everybody else's nominations.
Like this on the old Notes app on the
this
phone.
This is on this the is old great. Notes app that he did. Antonio Pierce ends up with six, which by the way, I would not have predicted. I would have thought Matt Eberflus would have named this award after him. Matt Eberflus had the biggest blunders of them all, let's be clear. But he only ended up having three nominations. Pierce had six. And so he is gone. And the question now becomes, and this is sort of, I put it to you, Kelly, but I'm putting it to everybody, which is if you're a GM, if you're an NFL owner, let's say, and you're selecting a new head coach, mm-hmm. what is your number one thing that you're looking for? Because I will tell you what mine is. Mine is, I don't even care if you are adept with X's and O's. I don't. I think the CEO coach model, like a Mike Tomlin, is an underrated model. Mm-hmm. I just want to know that you can think your way in out of in-game situations. Like we just displayed with Antonio Pierce in those two examples. Like Shooter McGamblin just showed us six different times he was nominated for Dumbo of the Week. I want to know that you are present during the game and make optimal decisions most of the time, if not all the time. And so Mike Vrabel to me, right? This is not a outlying opinion. He is largely considered to be the most, you know, desirable candidate out there. And the reason I feel he is probably not the reason that everybody else does, which is he has shown that he knows how to manipulate in-game decision-making, not 100% of the time, but the one that comes to mind is, remember how he exploited the loophole in that rule where the play clock keeps going back before 5 minutes? So prior to the five-minute mark in the fourth quarter, you could have gone in punt formation, remember? And you could have taken delay game. Let's say you're ahead in the game. Yeah. You could have taken repeated delay of game penalties and your play clock and the game clock wouldn't have stopped, right? Your play clock would have reset. The game clock would have restarted as well. So he was able to manipulate stuff like that. That's all I want. That's what I want in a head coach more than anything. And so what are you looking for? And then do you believe, part two of the question is, do you believe the Patriots who you're going to replace the guy that replaced the guy, right? Belichick, the looming specter of Belichick still looms over that franchise. Is that a more desirable place for him to go? Or is it the Raiders where his buddy Tom Brady is a minority owner where you can sort of follow, you know, the poo-poo platter of consecutive coaches?
I mean, neither are great. I think I'd rather have the Patriots job though. Still, I think you have at least a hope at quarterback right now with Drake May there. The Raiders, I have no idea what you're doing at that position. I mean, yeah, I could sit here and say you got Brock Bowers, you got a couple good weapons on that team, Max Crosby, a couple players around that team, but I think I'd still rather have the Patriots job. Yeah. But I mean, the head coaching thing is interesting. I think there are many ways to get it done, right? But I agree with you. I think you want someone that is a little bit more of the CEO. I think like Kevin O'Connell, I don't even know if he's the perfect CEO title, but it's you were able to bring in Brian Flores, a guy who has ex-head coaching experience, and yeah, might not get along with everybody too well, but clearly a defensive genius. And it's very obvious Kevin O'Connell's been like, well, I'm going to worry about what I'm best at, and I'm going to let Brian Flores do what he does on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're all able to work together, get that done, work with the front office, and it all seems seamless, That's the most important thing to me.
Oh, there definitely isn't one way to do it. I'm a big fan of the head coach has one expertise, synergy, and then you allow the other coordinator to do what that coordinator does. By the way, you bring up Brian Flores. Did you see the Ryan Fitzpatrick takedown of Brian Flores?
Yeah, and it's I did.
Takedown might be harsh. Let me explain what I'm talking about for those who missed it. Ryan Fitzpatrick, who played in Miami when Brian Flores was coaching there, he basically said that year started when Brian Flores was the head coach. It started fine. The first 5-6 weeks, Flores was super collaborative. It was a fun place to be. And then Flores lost his damn mind. Those are my words.
Became a dictator.
Yeah. By the end of the season, it was all about him. He was not he was not like collaborative. He was not asking the opinions of others. When I heard that, I'm like, oh boy.
Well, and this is the year where Fitzpatrick was playing. It was the tank for Tua year. I mean, Yes. We've heard about all the problems with Tua since then.
Yes. So where Tua went after his year with Flores.
It's always been a question to me of we can always bring up his name, because I think what he's done on the field in Minnesota has been great. We can always bring up his name as a head coaching candidate, but it is stuff like Fitzpatrick saying, he's like, hey, talk to the other guys that have worked with him before and see what they have to say about him.
Yeah.
And that's a concern.
Well, that was the thing. It's like, that was Ryan Fitzpatrick's point. If you had to ask one of his assistant coaches for a reference,
right,
you might not get one.
Yeah, and like that is.
Now,
one would hope
that Flores would have learned from that, would do a little self-reflection, but who knows? Anyway, I think it's all fascinating. So the Raiders, no longer have Antonio Pierce as their head coach. Search begins. We'll come back. JVT next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Are you ready to take your tailgate game to a whole nother level? You got to try Sewell's Barbecue, born from a backyard cookout in a mason jar of unforgettable flavor. Sewell's has become a Southern favorite. Delighting taste buds from Georgia to the Carolinas, from smoky ribs and mouthwatering wings to the perfect backyard burger, Sewell's turns every bite into a flavor-packed experience. Order now at sewellsbarbecuesauce.com. That's SewellsBBQSauce.com. Flavor this good is just a click away. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Best listeners in the game. Serious. For real. Love y'all. Jason H11, can you guys take a sec to discuss Kelly's unhealthy hate for team golf names? Also, Kelly, any luck helping me trade Rick Fowler? What is all that
this
about?
This is from the Tomorrow Golf League that premiered last night, Gil, which you didn't catch any of.
No, I did not.
I thought I was going to throw it on and turn it off within like 30 minutes. It was awesome. It was
indoor
awesome.
Golf.
Yes, this is down in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. They built this whole arena where basically you're driving and hitting clubs into this massive golf simulator, and then they have a green. They have a green complex that's built there with, like, I don't know, mechanical engines that, like, shift the shape of the green. So for every hole, it's a different setup. It was awesome.
Wow.
I mean, the only thing they're missing is a little bit more personality out of this golfer, these golfers. But as Jason tweeted, I learned last night, apparently Ricky Fowler has turned into Rick Fowler.
Well, he's adult now.
He's an adult, Gil. Yeah, he's wearing glasses and everything. So I guess he's adult Rick Fowler.
What were the team names you didn't like?
None of them. We're going over this on Long Shots podcast up now. Listen to wherever you get your Long Shots podcast. Video coming later, I think. But who knows? The team names, they're all like, they're kind of, like the live ones we all had problems with, right? So they're trying to attach. They're trying to attach like a city and a name. But like, so they're calling them like there's a New York golf club. Like they played last night. And like, but there's such a little, like there's maybe one guy who has some connection to the city. And it's a team of three. So I'm like, these names are stupid.
Is that what I saw DJ Khaled on? And like they were interviewing him.
Yes.
He was there and all that.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Ice cold gambler. Have we come to the conclusion yet that we're idiots for betting on NFL awards? Kevin O'Connell doesn't win coach of the year. I will retire. 28-1. Let's go. Ice cold gambler. I'm going to say you don't retire if he doesn't win. That's my guess. I'm going to say you still bet after that. It's just my hunch. Speed to Burn.
I swore I'd never bet comeback player of the year ever again.
JT at Speed to Burn 725. You're 100% correct, Gil. He says, I want a coach that can manage in game. Not many can today. Hire the right coordinators for X's and O's. I totally believe in that. Jonathan Von Tobel joins us, ladies and gentlemen. He is our senior NBA analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at MeJVT, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. What's happening, John?
Nothing much. You know, I will say that I will share similar anger if Kevin O'Connell did not win Coach of the Year. I don't have a good ticket like that. I've got him about 5-1. But I just really hate the discourse we have around singular events. So, like, he has one bad game, and all of a sudden he's an idiot who can't coach. The Vikings are cooked. Sam Darnold is a moron. And you know what I mean? Like, it's just it eliminates 16 prior data points that says he's an awesome coach and probably the best one this year. So I would share that anger, not so much because I didn't win, but also because of the discourse that followed it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. 95% I agree with you. The one sort of exception is, and this is as a guy who had Purdy MVP tickets last year, I did agree that he was so bad in that one game against the Ravens where I was like, okay, he's done. We lost. Like, that would be an exception. But it would have to be that big of a disaster. But in the Kevin O'Connell case, I'm with you.
No, yeah, but no guys, chance. How many awards can we give the Vikings when we're going to give Sam Darnold comeback player of the year? So, you know, we got to have that conversation.
I don't want to open this can of worms, buddy, but
I'm already losing, JVT.
You guys are wrong about this. No, actually, so I think this is going to be a Paul Skeens, I always get this wrong, Jackson Merrill situation. Where it's actually, we're going to have all this discourse about this. And remember, Jacksonville got all the way to like a -1,000 to win the Rookie of the Year award. And then all of a sudden the votes were released and he got like 6, right? Like it wasn't even close. Like, I think we're all talking about this and this is like a really big deal because Gil, you say it all the time, like we're so close to the sun and it's like all we're talking about. And then you're going to realize that of the AP voters, many of them were like, dude, I don't want to ask whether or not this is going to be valid. I'm just going to vote for Joe Burrow and this is going to be fine. So Darnold might get like 4 or 5 first place votes. And we're going to look back and go, oh yeah, like he wasn't going to win this thing.
So you got nothing to worry about.
The world will make sense to me once again if that's what happens.
Well, that's the thing I disagree with you guys about a lot. You know, even you, Kelly, you've said this before. What's he coming back from sucking? Or you've said he's only coming back from sucking. Yes, you've used the term. He's coming back. Whether or not you disagree with that clarification of whether or not it's a comeback, it is a comeback of some sort.
Oh, and now you've done it, man.
That's what happened.
We only got five minutes. He's ready to blow.
It's not the comeback. It's not the comeback from injury reward. I don't know where this is coming from. I also don't understand why people are so confused. The AP opened the door when they put other circumstances. I asked this question the second that clarification came out.
Wait, but no. But they, by putting out guidelines, that was they the whole clearly reason. Meant that
but
this
what,
is...
No. But okay, what does other... I asked the question to everybody. What are other circumstances? But what are other circumstances? They could be anything.
We'd have to put up the word.
But the other circumstances
was clearly not meant for coach's decision. That was clearly not meant.
Because that was clearly the purpose of making the rules.
That's exactly
was to eliminate
right.
these type of players.
No, sorry. No. Now you're getting me mad.
No, then don't say other circumstances. If I'm a voter, I'm going to take you at your word. And when your words say other circumstances and you don't define what other circumstances are, I will then define other circumstances on my own. So I believe that a downturn in a career and then revitalizing that career with your own play constitutes other circumstances. And thus, I think he could win the award.
So because
this is the AP's fault.
He said thus.
Because of what JVT is saying, though, and what Will texted me yesterday, I'm like, I'm toast. Because this is still... Because of using that reason, you can leave this open to whatever you want to make your interpretation of comeback player of the year.
John, have you submitted your ballot yet to us?
Yes, I know. No, I'm going to submit it. I have till noon, correct?
Yeah. Noon.
Noon deadline. That's it. Okay. We are not accepting after that. Of course we
are. Or just like after I take my kid to school.
Right? Exactly. Whatever you got time, buddy. Yeah, maybe
take your kid to school first. Okay, well, we only have 4 minutes left now, so let's get into the... I knew that was coming.
I'm going to have to leave today.
Let's start with the... I know Kelly called it the appetizer tonight, or the undercard, but it is, to most, the 31-4 Cavaliers hosting the 30-5 Thunder, the main event tonight. Cavaliers favored by 2.5. Any thoughts on this game?
Late two with Cleveland. I'm going to give my guys a shot here. I have been believers of Cleveland for a little bit throughout the entire year. You know, I think there's somebody that has proven at least that they can go toe to toe with some of these teams. Obviously, I'm very much hoping for what they have called a clavalanche to happen at some point here and for them to kind of dominate this game. But you think about the run that Oklahoma City has gone through in terms of opponents up to this point. You would think that maybe another heavyweight opponent would kind of weigh heavily on you. for OKC, but they have answered the bell. I mean, we're talking about Timberwolves, Clippers, Knicks, Celtics. I'm including the Clippers among those heavyweights. It's been quite the run here for Oklahoma City. So now to go on the road against Cleveland, who comes in here as a short favorite, who's playing among some of the best. I do think that I believe in Cleveland enough as a short home favorite after what OKC has gone through that they'll be able to get this done situationally and number-wise. So I laid two with Cleveland.
I think I know the answer, but I feel compelled to ask. Is this a preview of the NBA championship, or is one of these two teams getting to the NBA championship, or zero of these two teams getting to the NBA championship?
I mean, the Clippers aren't playing tonight, so this probably is not an NBA championship preview. Okay. No, I think both of these teams can make it. I do think we, the collective, are making too much of the recent struggles for the Celtics. Like, yes, they're going to be like a high variance team, and at times the 3-point shots are going to fall and it's going to look kind of ugly and they're going to lose some games maybe that they shouldn't. But in the grand scheme of things, when they're fully complete, because I was also part of the stretch that they were on, when they're fully healthy, they're like the best and deepest team in the NBA. But I think the Thunder are one of those teams that perfectly match up with them, right? They have size, the athleticism, the ability to switch, the ability to stay in front of guys to match the size that Boston does have with them too. I find it hard to really say emphatically that it is not going to be Oklahoma City and Boston, but I would say that I think I am among a few that give the Cavaliers more of a chance coming out of the East than I think others. I think a lot of people still chalk up the East to the Celtics, and I say the Cavs still have a chance to win that series.
I'm glad I asked that. They're okay. That's more than I thought I was going to get for the Cavs. Okay, rapid fire then. Well, first of all, anything else NBA tonight?
No, that was just the only thing I had so far today.
College football semifinals, your favorite play is?
I don't know if it's my favorite, but the initial thought when you asked me that question is I did take Penn State money line against Notre Dame. I understand there is some market support for Notre Dame to an extent. I like my quarterbacks in 2025 to be able to throw the forward pass. And Riley Leonard has not been able to do that to this point, under 100 yards and under 3.5 yards per attempt against Georgia. If you go back to their overall offensive output against Indiana, take away the 98-yard run from Jeremiah Love, who, by the way, is banged up for this game. They did nothing on the other snaps against Indiana offensively. I've really liked what I've seen from Notre Dame, and I think that you're looking at a kind of better, more advanced version of Notre Dame in just that their quarterback has the ability to throw the ball downfield, but their head coach has the ability to completely blow his foot off with the decision-making that he has. But I think the edges are enough for Penn State for me that I took a money line here.
Yeah, Penn State was super frustrating this last game for sure. Okay, and then Super Wild Card Weekend, your favorite bet is?
Ooh, I mean, so my favorite is I did lay 3.5 with the Philadelphia Eagles the second that opened. We were on Live Bet Sunday doing that. But I would also say that I did take 3 with Houston and a little bit on the money line. This was like kind of a matter of principle. I get that we're down on the Houston Texans, but I think this is a bridge too far for me when you're talking about a key number on the road with the Chargers and their uber conservative Harbaugh, who, by the way, I don't think they're actually that good. I think they just beat up on an easy schedule.
John, always a pleasure. Thanks for riling Kelly up and
a little bit. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it was my job. We gotta wake you guys up a little bit.
I expect nothing less from you, okay?
At me, right, JVT. Jonathan Von Topel, everybody, our senior NBA analyst. Thank you, sir. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Let's talk some college basketball on the other side. Man, number one went down hard yesterday. Jim Root from Three Man Weave joins us next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're getting ready for Big Game 59 with a big deal to match. Save $59 off a VSiN Pro annual subscription when you sign up using promo code ANG. Become a VSiN Pro annual subscriber. Bet smarter all year long with full access to our daily best bets, exclusive betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access, and of course, betting guides, expert picks for the Super Bowl and upcoming March Madness. Don't miss out on this big game deal. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe and use promo code ANG.
ANG as in a numbers game, folks.
To save $59 off a VSiN Pro annual subscription today, that's VSiN.com/subscribe. We had tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Trip Tepper, Pat's job, 10 times better than the Raiders' job. His reasons, AFC West, brutal division, 6 games versus Reed, Harbaugh, and Peyton. 2, Pats have a quarterback, Raiders don't. 2025 quarterback draft class / free agent market is weak. 3, Pats aging owner.
I like your tone.
3, Pats aging owner more desperate to win equals spend more money. All valid. All valid.
I think great points.
Well, yeah, all great points. The only thing I say is the looming specter of if legacy matters, do you want to deal with that? And maybe I'm making too much of that.
I was kind of thinking about the Kraft angle as well when you first asked me about. It's kind of like my Pat Riley take in Miami of like, never count out the Heat because Pat Riley will do whatever he can to try to make them relevant again before he finally retires.
Hoops by hoots. Old Rick Fowler was sporting his best Jamie Lee Curtis look last night, he said. Wow. Manny Davis is just about the JVT segment. All he does is going, fight, fight, fight. 3Jack, H3131, about that. He goes, tuned into a numbers game, and it sounded like a Jerry Springer segment. I'm still holding on to a ticket for the guy who died on the field, but after seeing last year's results, I also have a ticket on the ghost whisperer, Sammy D. Sam Darnold. Okay. We appreciate it. We'll get to more more tweets here. Momentarily. Oh, one more just to rally up here.
Yeah.
Call me radical. This is from Chili Gambler. Call me radical and apologies to Kelly's Darnold tickets. Oh, no, he doesn't have Darnold tickets. He has Burrow tickets.
Yeah.
But other circumstances to me is screaming a guy who died on the field just 2 years ago and played nearly 100% of snaps in the 14 games he was healthy this season. DeMar deserves one of these. There's so many about this. So it's funny because some people, they drives them crazy that we talk about awards, but then we get a million tweets about it, right? Logic 3227, any chance they give comeback player of the year to Hamlin to make up for not giving it to him last year? I mean, clearly the voters aren't worried about who's actually eligible, and on and on and on till the break of dawn. New York Mets 16, strong segment by JVT explaining his comeback player of the year interpretation, riling up Gil, crushing Kelly's hopes, and stating the Clippers are not playing, so it's not a finals preview.
I love debating with JVT. He's one of the few guys that I can have a rational debate
well,
with.
Well, it's fun because he's always smiling when he does it.
Yeah.
So he's
this goes back to our Hardwood Handicapper days of me and him screaming at each other for different things. Stop betting on the Lakers. Yeah.
let's talk some college hoops.
Thanks, Lakers.
Three Man Weave at 3MW_CBB on Twitter is where you can find these three gentlemen. But specifically at Second Chance Points, you can find one third of Three Man Weave. It's James Patrick Root, everybody. Jim Root joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Talk some college hoops. How you doing, Jim?
I'm good. It's a nice casual Wednesday here. We had an awesome, awesome night of basketball last night. A lot of great high major Power 5 games. So I'm kind of coming down from that high, ready for another big day of hoops.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about that momentarily. Let me again compliment. This is from Steve Fezzik, who live texts the show every day. The only back-to-back winner in the Hilton Super Contest. He says, I could be wrong, but I think this Jim Root guy is one of the rare cats that I don't get to fine. His mythical fines. He fines anybody. He levies a fine against anybody who talks about bets that they made earlier in the week with lines that are no longer available. He said he doesn't just tell me how he brilliantly played every line move before it moved. So there you go. Don't mess it up, Jim. That's what Steve says.
I'll try not to. It's funny. Two of the bets I was going to give out have moved in an hour since I wrote them down before I got on the show. But I'm only giving them out at current number. I won't even tell you what I got. So
okay. Before we get to the big outcome from yesterday that I want to talk about real quick, but this is from our group chat, because all we do, I'm on a text chain with not only Fezzik, but with Will Hill, Todd Wishnev, Chris Felica, and we're just betting college basketball live every night. And every once in a while, there's a comment about actual basketball besides our bets. And this is Fezzik yesterday saying, wait, St. John's is suddenly good enough that they can whack the X-Men in their crib. How do you feel about Rick Pitino's St. John's ball club?
They're really good. The weird thing with them is they can't shoot and they haven't shot threes at all this year. I think they're around 30%, one of the lowest in the Power Five. But they're good at basically everything else. They're big. They're awesome defensively. Pitino's got personnel that really is dominant on that side of the ball. They've got longer wings, quick guards, a shot blocker in Zubi Ejiofor, a really versatile forward, Aaron Scott from North Texas. So the fact that their defense is probably going to be awesome all season long, I trust that. And the offensive end, it's not pretty, but they make it work. They kind of take some shaky mid-rangers. It's not the shot diet you really want long-term, but Ejiofor is all over the offensive glass, and they've got guys that can beat people one-on-one in Smith and Richmond. So I'm pretty high on St. John's with Pitino at the helm, but there is that one glaring flaw that will always be there. It's just a terrible shooting team.
And speaking of old great Big East teams from the past, then Felica chimes in, and is like Georgetown respectable?
Oh,
we lost Jim.
My mistake, muted myself.
There you go.
They are. They're competent. I'm impressed. Coming into the year, I thought there was a bottom two roster in the Big East, but I did not realize how good Thomas Sorber, the freshman big man, would be. He's kind of changed everything for them defensively. They can funnel guys into the lane and let him take care of business there. And they're really their transfer backcourt. Malik Mack has been great, and Micah Peavy has been a lockdown defender, a great slasher. They're legit, too. I was really impressed with them hanging around with Marquette for 40 minutes last night.
Yeah, they hung around for most of that one. Okay, Tennessee, obviously the big result yesterday. Number one, Tennessee. They go to Florida. They lose by 30. Maybe you thought they'd lose, but 30. What happened there?
It was one of the worst shooting performances you'll ever see. I mean, they could not throw anything. They couldn't throw from a boat into the ocean. They couldn't manage it. I think it told me really how legit Florida is. I thought Florida looked great against Kentucky despite the loss on Saturday. And to back it up with that kind of a home performance is like, all right, yes, this team is legit top five, national title contender, every bit of that. They didn't even shoot the ball that well, and they won by 30. I'm not totally going to condemn Tennessee. I think they were 4 of 29 from the field in the first half, which is the worst half of shooting in the Rick Barnes era. So I'm not going to overreact to that. I think they'll be okay. There are some questions lingering offensively for them, but not enough to knock them out of, you know, the top seven or so nationally. I still feel okay about Tennessee.
Yeah, were you the guy who said you still think Auburn is the best team in college basketball?
I do, despite kind of a sloppy, messy final 5 minutes where they let Texas all the way back in. I think Texas scored 42 points in the final 12 minutes of that game, which is like, all right, hey, Auburn, that's a problem. But SEC road games have been really difficult, and that's going to come up in one of my bets here. I'm not going to, you know, bury Auburn either. I think they're the best team.
Okay, let's get to your bets. What do you have first?
Yeah, starting in the SEC, number 744 on the rotation, Oklahoma laying 3 here against Texas A&M. Oklahoma coming off a just slaughter at Alabama over the weekend. I kind of felt like that was coming. I don't blame them for that. Now they're back home. They're taking on Wade Taylor-less Texas A&M. A&M not going to have their best backcourt scorer. I think that is a problem. So OU, awful loss. And home teams in the SEC, 10-3 against the spread to start this season with some really big blowouts in there. I mean, you saw Georgia last night. Texas came back and covered. Mizzou covered easily. Florida covered easily. I'm riding this home trend here. I think Oklahoma off the loss against a shorthanded A&M is a good spot for the Sooners.
What do you lay here with Oklahoma?
-3 is what I'm seeing out -3 across the board right now.
Okay, 17th ranked Sooners against the 10th ranked Texas A&M squad. Okay, next.
Next is number 682 on the rotation, George Mason, laying 13. Another one where they're coming off a loss, really frustrating. They were winning with 5 minutes left at Rhode Island and kind of let it slip away. Now they come home against Richmond, who is not good and really sorely lacks athletes, but they're 2-0 in the A-10. They're kind of fat and happy right now. A team that has been not great all of non-conference play. It makes sense that Richmond would improve as the year goes on. It's a complex system that Chris Mooney has there for the Spiders, but George Mason, I think, off the loss can overwhelm them athletically. This is one that moved right before we got on the air as well, but I think 13 is still okay. I think the Patriots just kind of run away and hide against the Spiders that can't compete with them, both physically inside and just athletically on the perimeter.
And number 3?
Number 3, 695 on the rotation. Going with the total here, the over between Indiana and USC. Two teams that love to get up and down, play up-tempo. And you've got the added element here of no Malik Renault for Indiana. It's kind of changed who the Hoosiers are. They have to play one big man with Umar Ballo and then 4 perimeter guys around him. Mackenzie Mbako moving to the 4 has like revolutionized their offense. They take threes, they make threes. They've got driving lanes. They've got spacing now. It's a team that is much more conducive to the over because they can play faster with their alignment. They can score more easily. And on the other end, USC's got a ton of mismatch guys, 6'6" wings that are a little bit difficult to guard. I think Indiana's going to have a little bit of problem with them. So you combine the pace, you combine the efficiency. I like that over 149.5 is what I'm seeing out there.
All right, Jim, in our final 10 seconds here, you got a Packers helmet over your right shoulder. You're a big Packers fan. You think they can get it done?
I'm concerned, Gil. I just the injuries to Watson and Love are not getting me optimistic.
Yeah, I think that's a rather consensus opinion. Good luck to you, Jim. Thanks for the plays, man.
Thank you. I'll need it.
Jim Root at Second Chance Points. That's with the number 2 on the old Twitter machine. Our NFL playoff power rankings and Australian Open next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Are you the type of guy who wants to drop $10,000 or more on an NFL line at the best price in the market? Or maybe you're looking for instant acceptance on your in-game bets? You need Sporttrade, the app that's revolutionizing sports betting. With -104 lines instead of the standard -110, instant in-game betting, and a dedicated concierge player service, Sporttrade delivers a premium betting experience like no other. Live in New Jersey, Colorado, Iowa, Arizona, and Virginia. 10% of the states. Download SportTrade today. Use code VSIN to earn 10% cash back on every wager during your first week. Terms apply. Got to be 21 or older to play. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call or text 1-800-GAMBLER. Gil Alexander, live from Circa. It's a numbers game. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Jesse Welch, quote, "We're not going to go into the minutia of DVOA," unquote, Gil says. "What if we all really just want the minutia, Gilly?" Well, see, if we go into the minutia, Aaron's going to have to be here for 75 segments. Mm-hmm. We only have him for two. Aaron Schott's coming up top of the hour. Can't wait to talk to him about DVOA for the season, his thoughts on the Super Wild Card weekend, and, of course, his thoughts on awards.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the top DVOA. Well, I already seen him, but can't wait for him to talk through the top DVOA teams. But you know what it made me think of when I was typing him up for the graphic yesterday? It was, let me go see if that one team that Pro Football Focus had rated way higher than, like, the rest of the world, let me go see if that team's still there. Sure enough, end of regular season rating, team ratings over at Pro Football Focus, Atlanta Falcons are your fourth highest rated team.
That can't be real.
Hey, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what all goes into this, but that is their fourth highest rated team.
Oh, my. Auburnist. The Auburnist. Call it the Comeback from Injury Player Award. Of course, then some voters will say a player was psychologically injured when he was benched. We bet on this stuff. I hear you, the Auburnist.
I mean,
we sure do.
You either add most improved, so you have most improved and comeback player of the year, or just get rid of them. Just get rid of them. Is anybody going to care if we get rid of comeback player of the year?
Nope. Brian Schaefer, Gil, play GM for me. Wouldn't it be wise for the Warriors to deal Steph Curry for a boatload to rebuild? He is at the end of his great career, and he's done it all. Why not go get a chip and ride in the sunset? Well, if things were rational in this world, you'd be 100% right, Brian. But this is sort of like a mad bum thing in San Francisco, but to the highest degree, like on steroids. Unless Steph Curry ever walked up to the Warriors and said, listen, I want to be traded. I want to go get a championship elsewhere. There is no chance they trade this guy for any logical, strategical value, because he just means too much to that franchise and to just the fan base. Some things are irrational in sports. And it's like Madison Bumgarner. The Giants should have traded Madison Bumgarner at a trade deadline and gotten pieces back. But he was just such an institutional treasure that they couldn't do it. And the same applies for Steph.
Yeah, 100% what you just said. But I mean, also right now, like if you're the Warriors, like
you're still in it.
You get to a point where this does become a problem for a team, I guess, because are the Warriors good enough that they're going to go win a championship this year? Probably not. But also Steph Curry's still the best player on your team, and you're not going to get fair return for any trade that involves Steph Curry.
And finally, Bruce Dobigan, he's quoting Brian Flores. Brian Flores is on record as saying, quote, "I think I've evolved and learned from those mistakes," talking about Brian Flores' conversation earlier, and then Bruce Dobigan adds, "and could repeat them exactly if given the chance. He's perfect for Chicago."
I always really liked the guy before these stories started coming out. They shocked me when they did with Tua.
People lose their minds, man. They do. Okay. Australian Open, the draw comes out tonight,
bum, bum, bum.
Our time. So it's going to be in Australia tomorrow, in Melbourne tomorrow. The draw will come out. So, again, after the Megapod, after the show today with Cleve TA, then I'm going to do the pre-draw Beating the Book pod with Drew Dinsick, and then Zach Cohen and I will do the post-draw part of it on Friday. But pre-draw, as far as looking at the futures numbers right now and then just sort of cross-checking with my data on all of these players, women's and men's side, I will just leave it at this because we'll get into it more in the podcast. But let's start with the men's side because we have that up on the screen first. So the men's side, Jannik Sinner plus 150, Carlos Alcaraz plus 350, and then Novak at plus 450. I do think that these are all properly priced with the top-heavy men's side of things. You can always search for value, and I will give you a couple names where value exists, but do I really believe that that value will manifest in a Australian Open title? Probably not, which is different than it is on the women's side, where I think the long shots actually have a chance, right? So the value, quote-unquote, per my numbers on the men's futures board, are on Alex de Minaur. Alex de Minaur is 50-1. Based on my raw data, and I'm talking about now, what I do is I do service points win percentage, I do return points win percentage, I do break points. Obviously, fatigue happens then during tournaments, so there's a lot that goes into it. But essentially, I have Alex de Minaur as, let me rank him here for you. I got him as the, let's see, fourth best raw data. So besides Sinner, Alcaraz, and Djokovic, I've got Dimonar fourth, and he's at 50-1. And this is the problem on the men's tour, though, is, okay, 50-1, great value. I don't think a lot of people would disagree with that. He's Australian, too, by the way, so it's kind of a home game. But can he actually win when it comes to a semi or a final?
Right.
That's a whole different thing in tennis, right? Where the numbers at that point, can it actually manifest against gods of the sport in Sinner and Alcaraz and Djokovic?
So a quarter bet for you, or only if he gets put in the one quarter where those other guys?
I will sprinkle a little on it, but it will not be be a big sized bet. Like, gotcha. It will not be my normal size bet. Another name, again, this represents value on the men's side, but again, I'm going to caution just how the men's game is with Sinner and Alcaraz at the top. The other person of value based on my numbers is Grigor Dimitrov. At 65-1. I don't even know we have him listed here.
Grigor
Dimitrov, the Bulgarian, 65-1. He's gotten deep in Australian Opens.
100-1.
Well, wow. Better than what I see. I see 65-1. He's got my fifth best numbers, raw data, besides Sinner, Alcaraz, Djokovic, Dimonar, and then Dimitrov. But again, are these big bets for me on the men's side? No, because Sinner and Alcaraz exist. On the women's side, and again, we'll get into more of this on the Beating the Book Australian Open podcast. The women's side, where world number one is now Aryna Sabalenka, world number two is Iga Swiatek. This is the first time we have Iga in a slam since we won like five or six different tournaments on Iga in 2022 at 7-1 or longer. That was just a windfall of cash. So besides hitting the 30-1 on her first French Open, besides hitting on her U.S. Open title, 2022... we cashed on Iga maybe six or seven times. I'd have to go back and look. But like Miami Open, Indian Wells, like over and over and over. And she was always long. Since then, she's always had short prices. Plus 550 is what we're showing. Now, Shopper, this is DraftKings. I want to say FanDuel had a plus 650, which was Drew's fair price on Iga yesterday.
Checking.
So the question becomes, where is the value? I've got three players, the first of which is Iga Swiatek. Because while, yes, her numbers are not quite as stratospheric as they were, and while, yes, the gap has narrowed between her numbers and the field beginning with Sabalenka, she still got the best raw numbers in the sport, year, 6 months. So the first value is on Iga, plus 650 is the best price out there, plus 650 is the best price. The other two players with value, and these are bets, including the Iga bet. Karolina Muchova is 22-1. I actually got her at 25-1 yesterday, offshore, 25-1. I have Muchova behind Swiatek and Sabalenka in terms of raw data, hard courts, as my number three. And Mira Andreeva at 25-1, I also made a bet on. I've got her as the sixth best raw data. So the value on the ladies' side to me is Swiatek, Muchova, and Andreeva. Those are actually like real possibilities, as opposed to the men's long shots where it's like, yeah, it's value, but come on, is it really going to happen? So we'll see. Those are my thoughts, my initial thoughts on the Australian Open. Again, we'll get Drew's thoughts. His thoughts will be different, I'm sure. And then we'll get it post-draw. Once we know what the draw is quarter by quarter, we'll get into it with Zach on Friday. This is the difference between tennis and golf, though, as we always like to say, which is like golf, you know, you wait 3 months before a slam. Right. Tennis, you're like, bam, here we go.
Where's my girl Vondrousova at?
Marketa Vondrousova's in there.
50-1. Whew.
Yeah.
Come on, Marketa.
I have her.
She's my girl, right? With the tats?
She's the girl with the tats, yeah.
Love her tats.
Oh, you know her? That's tats with an A, Kelly.
Yes, tats.
I want to ram it in real quick here.
Yeah, let's do it.
NFL playoff power rankings, plug it in. DC 101. It's not going to be much different from our post-week 17, at least on my part, but I got Baltimore number one. This is all 14 playoff teams ranked.
Yep.
Baltimore's number one, Chiefs number two, Bills number three, and then I have the cavalcade of NFC teams. The only real change for me is I got the Rams up at seven. I got the Packers down at nine. And then 10 through 14, basically at the end, Broncos, Chargers. I have the Chargers as my lowest ranked playoff team.
I was intrigued to say to see that, but
easiest schedule.
But we'd say it's the same lowest four. It's the playoff skill, which means the Chiefs go to number one because it's Patrick Mahomes and they get a bye. But I'm going Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, Lions, all the NFC teams we talked about, bottom four AFC teams, Chargers, Texans, Broncos, Steelers for me.
Who cares what we think? Let's get what Aaron Schatz thinks through the metric of DVOA and awards thoughts as well. Aaron Schatz next on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.